Hello and welcome to Developing Perspective. Developing Perspective is an intermittent podcast hosted by me, David Smith. I'm an independent iOS developer based in Herndon, Virginia. And Developing Perspective covers topics of interest to me, which typically includes things like iOS, Apple, development news, things like that. And the show will almost always run shorter than 15 minutes. So without further ado, let's get started. Basically, I think today I'm going to talk through two articles and sort of topics that I've written about on my blog recently. First is a bit more general, and then the last one's a bit more topical. So first off, it's going to talk about the concept of adding quiet into your day. I wrote an extensive article on this on my blog, which I'll link to in the show notes. But at a high level, it's something that I've been struggling with recently is the challenges of being always connected. And the challenges of sort of what that does for both your mind and your attention, as well as kind of the impact that has on your work and your productivity and those types of challenges. And what I did is for a relatively short period of time, probably about a week or two, I made some fairly drastic changes in how I work, in the things that I do to allow myself to do. Sort of obvious of these was that I set up an entirely new machine that was separate from my main machine that I do my work on, and set up the secondary machine so that that's where I do all my sort of communications and reactive activities in a day. So if I'm sitting down at my main machine, which is a big 27-inch iMac with a secondary display, set up all right, really the only things I can do on that right now is work. I can do Xcode, Photoshop, those types of things. But it was set up so that I can't check my email, Twitter, those types of things. And then I have another machine, a MacBook Pro off to the side, somewhere physically very separate from that that I have to use if I want to do those things. I changed my iPhone a little bit so that I don't have as many notifications. I have a silent ringtone. Like I said, I walked through all this in the article. And just kind of what I thought would be interesting in Developing Perspective is to talk about what of those changes really were effectual and which ones were just kind of fun and whimsical and like, oh, that's kind of interesting, but didn't really work. So to start with, I'm going to talk about having the changes I made on my iPhone. Having a silent ringtone is great. Highly recommend that to anybody what I mean by that is I've set up my default ringtone to be silent. So my phone just doesn't make any noise. There's no alert. There's nothing happening when someone calls. And for my favorites, for my wife, my parents, my couple of coworkers, things like that, they have specific ringtones that you can go and you go into your contacts and you can assign them a ringtone. So if someone I care about calls, I get the call. If it's something else, if it's my optometrist telling me my contacts are ready, if it's a telemarketer, if it's something, I'll get a missed call and I'll get a voicemail and I can check that whenever I want, but it doesn't kind of impress on me that, someone's trying to get your attention. Oh, someone's trying to get your attention. When in reality, I don't care. And so that's just something that I've really enjoyed, that there's just kind of fewer interruptions. And when I am interrupted by my phone, I know it's something that I care about. Something else I did on my phone was to change the default mail things so that it doesn't alert me to new mail. That was very nice too. I enjoy that. Go into the notification center settings and you can set mail so that it doesn't have a badge. It doesn't alert you when there's new mail. And a little added bonus benefit that I didn't think of when I started it is that you can then disable push for mail distribution, which saves your battery a lot. So essentially, because there's no notification that's going to come up, my mail is going to be checked when I want it. I set it to update every half hour or so. So, I have roughly new mail, but when I open up the mail app, it'll then go and check and grab all the new stuff then, rather than constantly doing it in the background and draining my battery. So those two things I think were big wins on the iPhone. Having a separate computer for all my reactive stuff, that's kind of a mixed bag. And it's tricky because I found that works great for Twitter, RSS, and Campfire, or kind of chat in general. It doesn't work so well for email. And the thing that I found for that is that email is often something that I am doing that's sort of part of the product, the productive part of my day. And I tried things where I'd, you know, have shared documents between so I could move tasks around, or doing it inside of like my GTD to-do manager syncing and things. But often what I really need is a client will send me something that says, here is three things you need to change on this. And then I'll open it up and I'll be making those three changes. And it was very awkward and cumbersome to be kind of juggling between that. And, you know, I'm replying to them. It's, oh, here's this thing I need to copy from my main computer, and now I need to get this text over to the other one. So that didn't work so well. But I think it does work well for other things. Those things that aren't really core parts of your day, that are just kind of creating an environment of information about understanding of what's going on, those things work great on a separate computer. And the interesting thing is, it's not that having them on a separate computer means that I check them less often. Maybe sometimes part of me wishes that were the case, that having it separately and physically separate would mean that I would do it less. But really what happened is that I'm just aware of the amount of time I spend in a day sort of it's not really slacking off in that sense, but the amount of time I spend in a day kind of off doing things that aren't strictly productive, that are more meta activities for keeping informed and understanding what's going on in my industry. Every time I kind of, you know, roll my chair back, turn around, and go over to my MacBook Pro, that's something that I know is I'm making a choice then, rather than what I was doing before. And this is the thing, the habit that I'm glad I'm gradually being able to break, is I would before be able to kind of just reflexively twitch over to something else. It's like I hit compile in Xcode, and then, oh, let's see what's happening on Twitter. Oh, let's see what's happening in RSS. And that kind of the speed at which I could do that meant that I did it without any intentionality, that I was just whenever I wanted, whenever the sort of I had a thought, oh, and what I ended up inevitably doing is, you know, my compilation in Xcode would take, you know, 6 seconds, and I'd be spending, you know, 90 seconds reading my Twitter or whatever. And so it was a much sort of more constant noise in my day, rather than now it tends to be more like, after all, you know, every 20, 30, 40 minutes, kind of like having a little mental break, it's something that I can go and look at. I definitely still keep, and I think I'll definitely still keep that part. Like I said, I've scaled back on the mail, those types of things on the PC, but I'm still kind of working this out. I definitely do still, have found that using Instapaper on the Kindle is a great way to kind of add quiet to myself too, which is on that reactive machine. On my MacBook Pro, I primarily focus on taking the content that looks interesting to me that I kind of come across during the day, and I throw it into my Instapaper queue. And then at 5 o'clock, I have Instapaper send me a sort of it all as a big bundle onto my Kindle, which is a regular generic Kindle 4. And I use that on a daily basis sort of to actually do the long form reading, rather than feeling A, that I should do it in real time, which is probably not good for productivity. And two, it's great after spending all day in front of all these backlit LCD screens doing work to kind of lean back with an e-ink, you know, sort of almost analog Kindle. It just feels much more relaxing than when I used to read, you know, reading it on the iPad, on the iPhone. And so that's definitely something that I think is another thing that kind of started off doing as part of this experiment, but really came into its own as a result of kind of playing with that and really kind of understanding the different options there and the settings that are available with Instapaper. All right. And so that's sort of those changes and those things that I've been doing there. The second thing is sort of a bit more topical that I was going to talk about is some of the new things that are going on with iBooks, and specifically iBooks Author. It's kind of interesting. I mean, there's an article I wrote on my blog about this, again, in the show notes. But it's the interesting thing that I think, and I'm taking a slightly different tack than I was talking about in my article. That was talking mostly just about kind of the licensing agreement part of it that people made a bit of a fuss about, where essentially if you make an iBook in iBooks Author, you can only commercially distribute that through the iBook store, which seems entirely reasonable to me, that Apple's creating this free tool and platform for selling things in their system, and if you're going to do that commercially, that they deserve their cut. Fair enough. But mostly what I was going to get at here and start talking about, though, is what I was kind of struck by is the degree to which that is going to sort of democratize the textbook industry potentially. And it's a big, big question in terms of if that's actually going to happen, if if publishers and authors and all those kinds of people are actually going to get into all this. But it seems to me that Apple has created an environment that may do for sort of that kind of rich publishing educational market what, you know, sort of happened with the App Store. What I mean by that is, so if I'm, say, for example, I'm a stay-at-home parent or a parent who homeschools their children, and I come up with kind of, you know, a mini curriculum for teaching a particular subject to my child. Before, I really didn't have a platform by which I could easily share that content with someone else, to share it with other kids, to share it with other teachers, other schools, whatever. That was something that sort of I had just for myself. Like maybe I could do a website, maybe, but it's hard to do that commercially and kind of have it, the effort be paid off to kind of polish it and package it. But what Apple's done here is kind of what they do with the App Store, where there's no, you know, they have all the big publishers on board in terms of Pearson and McGraw-Hill and those big guys. But the way it's going to be in the iBook store, those people are given no sort of additional bonus for being a big publisher. That if I'm a small independent publisher, teacher, educator, and I come up with something and I publish a book, I put it in the iBook store, I'm on equal footing for customers and students for that being something that they see. Now, fair enough. It's like I have a if I'm McGraw-Hill, I have a big marketing budget, I have existing relationships, and those things are all true with the App Store as well. You know, we have these big EA games and sort of, you know, the Omni Group or all these large publishers that have, you know, existing relationships with both customers and Apple and so on. But, you know, you have these tiny little apps made by one guy who ends up making huge sums of money and being very successful and kind of getting all this attention, even though they're just, you know, small indies. And I would delight to see the same thing happening with iBooks and with educational things, that it kind of creates this ability that people who are really care a lot about a narrow niche and could really explain it and teach it and kind of share that knowledge well, now have a platform and an ability to do that. And I think that's only good for education, to kind of be able to take these things that are currently so broad that if you're to look at someone, you know, the skill sets you would need to write, you know, a college biology textbook is pretty complicated. It's a huge breadth of topics. Whereas I would strongly imagine that we will see people heading more and more into doing smaller, more focused things that on their area of expertise. It's like, I'm not going to write the 101 textbook, but I can really understand this one particular thing, and I can write an incredibly good, you know, shorter, focused book on that topic. And maybe it's not a $15 book or, you know, the pricing, who knows. But by allowing us to kind of pull back and focus on what that person really cares about, I think you can do some kind of powerful things in that way to kind of be like, okay, anybody can do it. You know, if I wanted to write a book about making this podcast, I could, you know, showing about, and I can do videos and screencasts about, you know, the tools I use, my physical setup within video, you know, talk about it, show statistics, all kinds of things that I wanted to do. Sure, I could just do that, make a book, put it in the store. And that seems kind of powerful to me in a way that is kind of cool. It's similar to what's happened on the Kindle, I know, where all these tiny authors are now competing with huge, you know, James Pattersons and Grishams for people's attention just because the Kindle store allows anybody to write a novel and publish it. And that seems pretty cool to me. So anyway, so those are the two kind of topics. I'm hopefully going to be able to get back to more developing perspective on a more regular basis. But, you know, life's been a bit complicated recently. But anyway, I'll be trying to keep at it. So please subscribe, tell your friends, and otherwise I will see you next time. Bye.